It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price, a tale of two lockdowns.
Open Texas 100%.
We need to bend the curve in the state of California.
That is our top story at noon. Nearly a year after COVID shut down the country, we're seeing two very different responses in the two most populous states.
California staying closed with strict rules in place, and Texas ending all COVID restrictions.
Marianne Rafferty at Fox News. Texas Governor Greg Abbott says life's about to return to normal in the Lone Star State.
Effective next Wednesday, all businesses of any type are allowed to open 100%. That includes any type of entity in Texas. Also, I am ending the statewide mask mandate.
California Governor Gavin Newsom slamming the rush to reopen Texas. Newsom called the move reckless. Governor Abbott calls it necessary.
Too many Texans have been sidelined from employment opportunities. Too many small business owners.
COVID vaccine rollout continues. The first federal vaccine super site opened up today in South Florida. It is the first site in the country to offer the new Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
This will be one of the first locations in the country to actually distribute it. We will have 500 vaccine doses per day, along with the Pfizer vaccine. But we're very excited to have the Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
FEMA spokesman Marty Bowman. President Biden, meantime, moving up his target date to have enough vaccine to inoculate every single adult in the country. The president says that can now happen by the end of May. New York lawmakers say they'll revoke Governor Andrew Cuomo's pandemic powers as soon as Friday. The disgraced Democrat embroiled in two major scandals involving nursing home deaths and sexual harassment claims. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio.
If these allegations are true, he cannot govern.
A new Emerson College poll, meantime, shows two-thirds of all New Yorkers think Governor Cuomo should not be reelected to a fourth term. Over the summer, the governor had an approval rating of 70%. Today, it's 38%. Pollster Spencer Kimball.
Losing half of your approval over 6-7 months is going to take an impact on you. And it really concerns you if it turns more into a bandwagon barnstorming where in the next few weeks we see the bottom drop out.
If Andrew Cuomo drops out, his lieutenant governor, Kathy Hochul, would become the first female governor in New York state history. Today, the New York Post reporting that Andrew Cuomo has no plans of stepping down. Order at the border. The Biden administration says despite the fact that 3,000 illegal immigrants are crossing the southern border every single day, it is not a crisis.
It's a challenge. We've provided numbers publicly about how serious that challenge is. We are approaching this humanely.
White House spokeswoman Jen Psaki, officials meantime, projecting 117,000 unaccompanied migrant kids are expected to cross the southern border this year alone. That would pass the all-time record by nearly 50%. Florida Senator Marco Rubio.
Trafficking networks are taking advantage of poor, desperate people, and they're telling them, there's a new president. This new president will let you come into the United States and stay there if you show up with a child. So now you've created an incentive for children to be sent on that journey.
Meantime, in California, a human smuggling operation went horribly wrong yesterday after 13 people were killed when the SUV they were in was hit by a big rig. That SUV was built for 7, but was carrying 25 at the time of the accident. And in Texas, 108 migrants released by Border Patrol have now tested positive for COVID-19. Mara Liasson at NPR.
As the weather gets warmer, the spring is usually the time that you have the biggest surge of migration anyway. So they've got to figure out a way to discourage people from coming at the same time they're saying they're going to be more welcoming. I just think that's really hard.
Immigration expert Mark Morgan says the administration's open borders policy not only poses a health risk during a global pandemic, There's also a human cost involved here.
If you want to talk about cruelty, this country right now is actually encouraging and facilitating and incentivizing moms and dads in countries in the Western Hemisphere to hand their kids over to cartels and smuggling organizations to make the dangerous trek during the middle of a global pandemic to illegally enter this country. This country should not be doing that. We should be stopping this.
Morgan says COVID-positive migrants who've crossed the border now heading to states like Maryland, North Carolina, and New Jersey. An Iraqi military base with U.S. troops was hit by at least 10 rockets overnight. Officials say Iran was behind the attack.
Once again, U.S. troops are in the bullseye. This is the fourth Western base targeted in that country in the last 3 weeks.
Fox News reporter Greg Palkett, Iraq war vet Pete Hegseth, says for those who thought our problems with Iran would simply go away after President Trump left office, you are sorely mistaken.
The way to respond with the Iranian regime is through strength, is through maximum pressure, is to make sure they know you will never tolerate the target of Americans and you will never, ever get a nuclear bomb. That was clear, crystal clear under the Trump administration. But because most of the Biden administration is made up of former Obama officials who are wedded to the Iran deal, they're jumping straight to the table without preconditions, which sends all the wrong signals.
South Dakota Republican Mike Rounds sits on the Senate Armed Services Committee. He says the Biden administration cannot afford to go soft on Iran.
Iran is the problem child in the region. They continue to try to manipulate and to influence activity in Iraq. But we've got men and women that are in harm's way.
Officials say last night's attack in response to President Biden's decision to hit an Iranian military base last week in Syria. Dolly Parton offering a bare shoulder in Nashville to get the Moderna vaccine that she helped fund with her $1 million donation. While waiting for the shot, Dolly changed up the lyrics to one of her songs.
Vaccine, 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 vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate.
All kidding aside, Dolly Parton says her message is serious.
If we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. Still to come this Wednesday, Andrew Cuomo says he is not resigning. Kathy Hochul next in line if he does, in vaccinating teachers in the Commonwealth.
Well, good afternoon to all. A milder day underway, but colder air is on the way. I'll have the complete forecast coming up shortly.
Thank you, Kevin Williams. Checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania, Wednesday, March 3rd. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf went public today with the state's plan to get schools back open in the era of COVID-19. That plan involves getting nearly 250,000 teachers and support staff vaccinated by the end of the month.
We're basically saying to teachers, we want you to get back to teaching, and we're going to make this available.
The governor enlisting the support of the National Guard at 28 specially designated teacher vaccination sites all across the Commonwealth.
The state can't force the school. The school districts are all independent and they make their own decisions. But the deal as far as the teachers are concerned is that we need them to get back to school. And if you've been offered a vaccine, you ought to be willing to go back to school.
Republican Representative Tim O'Neill is a member of the governor's coronavirus task force.
Reopening our schools is something that everybody wants. It's not a Democrat issue. It's not a Republican issue. It's a Pennsylvania issue.
And Pennsylvania expects 94,000 doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine to arrive this week as schools face increasing pressure to bring students back to the classroom for full-time in-person learning. Governor Cuomo will have his emergency powers that were given to him at the start of the pandemic revoked as soon as Friday by the New York State Legislature. Democratic Assemblywoman Crystal Peoples-Stokes.
What we're essentially looking at doing is repealing some of the powers as well as allowing directives that are already in place to expire.
But Senate Minority Leader Rob Ort says removing the governor's pandemic powers isn't nearly enough in light of the two major scandals he's now involved in.
Rescinding the governor's powers isn't the answer. That's not going to bring these brave women any sort of justice or closure. That's not going to bring the families who lost loved ones closure. That should have been done, the rescinding of the powers, because the legislature wanted to get back to the job that we were elected to do.
A growing number of Republicans and Democrats in Albany and Washington now calling for Governor Andrew Cuomo to step down. Central New York Congresswoman Claudia Tenney.
I'm so pleased that so many Democrats have finally gotten a position where they can come out against the governor, and it looks like it's a very bipartisan move for him to resign right away.
If Andrew Cuomo is removed from office, his lieutenant governor, Kathy Hochul, would become the first female governor in New York State history. Republican strategist Carl Calabrese.
Kathy Hochul is a Western New York Democrat. Western New York Democrats tend to be a more of a centrist Democrat than a New York City Democrat, which Andrew Cuomo is.
Calabrese says if Hochul wants to keep the top spot in New York state politics, she'll have to attract downstate voters, and that means moving to the left on a number of issues.
Now, she's had to be the loyal trooper as his lieutenant governor and support his policies. There are many times where I could hear her defending policies that I could just sense that in her heart she was not there, but she was doing her job.
Carl Calabrese says Kathy Hochul isn't well known outside of Western New York, but that could all change if Cuomo decides to step down. That could be a big if, though. Today, the New York Post reporting that the governor has no intentions of stepping down. The New York State budget due at the end of the month, and a growing number of lawmakers say it's become impossible for them to do their jobs with Cuomo still in power.
There is a lot of work to do, and we need people who are able to do the job and focus on that. And obviously the governor at this point is distracted and dealing with one crisis after the next, and he's unable to do the job at hand.
Republican Assemblyman Mike Lawler says it's time for Cuomo to step down for the good of New York State. Democratic Assemblyman Angelo Santa Barbara says the governor needs to go.
This governor has become a distraction at this point, and we have a lot of important work to do. This budget is perhaps one of the most important budgets we're ever going to work on because it involves federal dollars, COVID relief for our communities, things that we need to restart the economy. So when you say revoking his powers, sure, that's something we can do, but it's just the tip of the iceberg. The
lawmakers have started budget negotiations in Albany during a pandemic and amid a cloud of uncertainty surrounding the executive branch. Well, when it comes to airports, roads, and bridges, Pennsylvania and New York need a lot of work. That according to a new report from the American Society of Civil Engineers.
The grade across all 17 categories of infrastructure was a C-.
Spokeswoman Emily Feenstra says there's a lot that factors into that lackluster grade.
Real-time infrastructure conditions, the future funding needs, public safety.
The pandemic played a big part, too, with revenue losses for transit agencies and airports all across both states. Even so, Emily Feenstra remains hopeful.
Infrastructure is one of those few issues that both sides of the aisle can agree with.
Congress set to take up a massive infrastructure bill later this year. Sunny time. Your two-minute drill.
Yeah, let's start with some baseball news. In June of 2019, the New York Mets honored Tom Seaver by changing the address of Citi Field.
We're lucky to have their daughters with us here, so at this time I'd like to bring Sarah and Ann up as we unveil our new address, 41 Seaver Way.
This baseball season, there is more. The team is wearing the number 41 patch on their jersey sleeves in honor of the pitcher who died in August at the age of 75. The circular patch features a blue 41 with orange trim. The patch made its debut during the Mets' first spring training game in Florida. Huge night in college basketball. Josh Imbala's 15 helped lead Buffalo past Akron 80-78. Number 6 West Virginia loses in overtime to number 3 Baylor 94-89. Pitt big over Wake Forest 70-57. Number 2 Michigan crushed by number 4 Illinois 76-53. The Penn State Lady Lions fall to number 24 Rutgers 74-56. On the ice, it's the fourth straight loss for the Sabres. They fall to the Rangers 3-2. Ralph Kruger is not happy.
Well, it's really the first game since COVID that we felt the compete level and the battle level that we're expecting from each other, and that was encouraging. We're finding ways not to win, and certainly the start didn't do us any good.
New Jersey had fans in the stands, but fall to the Islanders 2-1. Barry Trotz is happy.
We're learning to manage our not so good moments, and and we're taking advantage of our good moment.
The Battle of Pennsylvania, the Penguins beat the Flyers 5-2. Penn's head coach, Mike Sullivan.
It's a game of mistakes that they're going to happen out there, and we just have to make sure that we get back on our toes and try to grab the momentum when things don't go our way.
Pittsburgh's won 7 of 10. Philly had their 3-game winning streak snap. In the NBA, the New York Knicks had their 3-game winning streak snap. In San Antonio by the Spurs, 119-93. for Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolfiet.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Wednesday edition of the Noon Report, vaccinating teachers in Pennsylvania, opening up businesses in Texas, and a ticket to ride to the moon.
COVID-19 did not create nearly as many problems and challenges for our culture as it revealed and escalated. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Like the medical comorbidities that made the COVID-19 virus more dangerous and more deadly for individuals, there were pre-existing conditions in our culture that were only made worse during the pandemic. For example, social distancing and lockdowns made the pre-existing cultural problem of loneliness so much worse for so many. In the same way, the general widespread disregard for those with intellectual disabilities in our culture made their mistreatment during the pandemic that much easier as well. For example, during the first wave of the pandemic in Great Britain, various facilities that care for people with intellectual disabilities, what the Brits call learning disabilities, issued blanket do not resuscitate orders. These orders came, at least according to one source, directly from doctors, without consulting the patients or their families. In December, following a public outcry, Britain's Care Quality Commission investigated this and found that these orders were, in their words, inappropriate and should be rescinded. Unfortunately, that was not the end of the problem. According to the Guardian newspaper, people with intellectual disabilities such as Down syndrome continue to be told that they will not be resuscitated if they become ill with COVID. This despite last year's public outcry and despite the commission's report and instructions. And given that people with intellectual disabilities age 18 to 34 are 30 times more likely to die of COVID than others the same age, a do not resuscitate order is just practically a death sentence. Now, this horrific practice has nothing at all to do with medicine. Do not resuscitate orders are usually reserved for people too frail to benefit from CPR. And that's not the case here. As one advocacy group told The Guardian, some orders seem to have been issued for people simply because they had an intellectual disability. Now, why single out people with intellectual disabilities? Well, the immediate answer is obvious. The doctors issuing the orders are eugenicists. They're willing to eliminate patients who they think drain resources. The larger answer is also obvious. Embedded across Western culture is a tendency to commodify human life, valuing people based on extrinsic abilities and appearances. Thus, the disabled are just not deemed as valuable as the non-disabled. In the UK, this thinking is obvious in other areas. For example, a positive Down syndrome test in utero results in an abortion 90% of the time. Attempting to explain away this terrible number by noting that not all pregnant women are tested for trisomy 21 does not change the awful inconvenient fact. When a British woman is told that her unborn child has Down syndrome, she's 9 times more likely to kill the child than to keep it. In Britain, the do not resuscitate order scandal took place in the midst of the pandemic, but the ideas that led to them existed long before. COVID-19 just gave cover for these ideas to be put in practice under the guise of greater good or necessity. Recently, a British Joint Committee on Vaccinations announced that those with intellectual disabilities would now be prioritized for the COVID-19 vaccine. That's good news, though it was likely just a reaction to the scandal. And it still does not address the eugenic impulse prevalent in so much of Western culture and medicine. Which means long after the COVID-19 emergency has passed, we'll still need to be working to confront and to displace the very bad idea that some lives are worth less than others. And we'll still need to be standing up for and protecting the victims of that very bad idea. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
20 minutes past the hour, let's head outside.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. While we are enjoying a little bit of a break from the cold air, there's more cold air to come. A pair of cold fronts over the next several days dropping down from the north will assure us of some chilly air that will carry us through the weekend. But for this afternoon, milder than of late. Where there is sunshine, clouds will gather, and clouds will elsewhere thicken up across the region with high temperatures in the 40s. A couple of light rain showers or sprinkles this evening, some flurries overnight tonight into tomorrow morning. Low tonight in the 20s, the high tomorrow in the 30s. And then on Friday, it's partly, if not mostly, sunny and chilly with high temperatures in the upper 20s to the middle 30s.
All righty, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. If you're just joining us, here are some of the stories we're following for you today, Wednesday, March 3rd. Life is about to return to normal in the Lone Star State.
Open Texas 100%.
Governor Greg Abbott.
Effective next Wednesday, all businesses of any type are allowed to open 100%. That includes any type of entity in Texas. Also, I am ending the statewide mask mandate.
Abbott says businesses can put in their own COVID restrictions and requirements. They don't need the state to tell them how to do it. In California, meantime, an entirely different story. Strict lockdowns continue there, where high school sports have been sidelined for nearly a year now. Student athletes and their parents suing Governor Gavin Newsom to let them play.
There's not any medical evidence to support the fact that high school sports are any more dangerous than college sports.
Brad Graham says there's no reason his son Caleb can't play high school basketball in the state of California. Caleb says his hopes and dreams being dashed right before his own eyes.
I was watching college basketball today, and it's a little bit irritating considering they can do it safely, and we can't. And
Caleb Graham says his dream of playing college hoops is being taken away by the COVID lockdowns in the Golden State. Now to New York State, where the legislature could vote this Friday to remove Governor Cuomo's emergency powers given to him at the start of the pandemic nearly a year ago. But Senate Minority Leader Rob Ort says the timing of the legislature's decision, with the governor now embroiled in two major scandals, is suspect, to say the least.
It's indisputable to me. There's no one watching at home that thinks that this just happened. It should have happened a month ago. It could have happened 2 months ago. It's happening this week. You do the math.
Buffalo Democratic Assemblywoman Crystal Peoples-Stokes says the nursing home scandal has nothing to do with Governor Cuomo's pandemic powers.
Critics would like to say that this is necessary because somehow what happened with the nursing homes warrants removing executive powers. But honestly, what happened with the nursing homes didn't require executive powers. Those powers the governor already had. It had nothing to do with the legislation that we passed last year.
The effort to strip the governor of his pandemic powers has broad bipartisan support in New York, but many are calling for Cuomo to step down in the aftermath of sexual harassment claims and COVID-19 nursing home deaths.
While sexual harassment is unacceptable, I think the nursing home story may be the bigger story here, because look, we're talking thousands of lives here. 15,000 deaths in nursing homes in New York. That is more than 37 U.S. states.
Media critic Joe Concha. Today, the New York Post reporting that Governor Cuomo has no plans of stepping down. President Biden has pushed up his target date to have enough COVID-19 vaccine to inoculate every single adult in the country by the end of May.
That's progress.
The president says teachers should be at the front of the line to get the shot.
Let's treat in-person learning like an essential service that it is.
Mr. Biden says he's directing states to prioritize teachers with the goal of having every single educator given at least one shot by the end of the month.
Throughout March, they will be able to sign up for an appointment at a pharmacy near them.
Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf says all teachers and staff in the Commonwealth should be vaccinated against the coronavirus by the end of the month.
We need to make sure that when students and teachers get back to the classrooms, they're safe. Our job is to make sure students can focus on learning and growing rather than on worrying about their safety. Together, we're making progress, I think, to help our youngest and our most vulnerable students get back to the classroom safely.
And Governor Wolf says with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine now available, Pennsylvania can start vaccinating its teachers in order to safely reopen school. Coming up on 25 minutes past the hour, you're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome back to another edition of Real Answers with Christopher Anderson. Wednesdays during the Noon Report, we tackle the tough topics facing today's families with licensed mental health counselor Christopher Anderson. And today we have a very timely topic that really seems as if it could apply at many levels, right, Chris?
Well, isn't that the truth, Brandon? Yes, indeed. Today we're going to be discussing some very
practical reasons and strategies for looking into how to build bridges, finding common ground with whom we disagree. And Brandon, you are so right in saying at many levels, as we're seeing division on a number of levels in society, including and especially within our churches.
So let's start there, Chris. What's going on in churches?
We are imperfect people trying to come together to serve a perfect God. Mm. But our fallen nature, of which pride is a huge part, gets in our way, in all of us. All right? Nobody is immune to that. But now with so many hot-button topics on the political stage, these topics and issues also enter through the doors of the churches, and pastors and church leaders have to grapple with them as well. So in everything from sexual orientation and gender identity issues to illegal immigrant issues and how the churches respond to them, and also the present COVID crisis. So these issues aren't going away, and church leaders need to take them seriously, be very intentional about developing policies and official responses to these challenges. And of course, a lot of churches probably have already done that or are in the process of doing that. But really, dealing with these divisive topics needs to happen at the individual level as well, if we are to take our God-given mandate to share the word very seriously.
Chris, I like what you said, that church leaders need to be intentional about dealing with them and developing policies. What about the individual?
Well, it's important to remember that these issues are entry points in the conversation. If you haven't taken the time to consider them yourselves, backing up your points with Scripture, you will be very tempted to shy away from opportunities to engage people in discussion. Now, please don't get me wrong. I'm coming to you now as someone who doesn't necessarily have this down as a science. It's messy, and I'm in no way claiming to be even close to perfect at this, because there are topics that I'm not personally well-versed on, and I would have a hard time supporting my views in a conversation or debate, even though what I personally believe is based on God's truth. Now, it's okay to tell somebody with whom you disagree that you don't have all the answers, but you believe based on what the Bible teaches. We won't always be really good about making our points, and we won't always win people over. But your conversations with others don't have to be overly spiritualized either. And what I mean is, when you're talking to folks that are not believers, they often won't have the same level of understanding of Scripture that you do. And if they don't know much about the Scripture, of course, then using a ton of Scripture isn't going to mean a lot to them. But taking the time to engage people in conversation and looking for ways of connecting is really important.
Chris, I know that you have a personal example to share.
I do, Brandon, and recently I had a conversation with a childhood friend of mine who very much would identify politically as falling on the opposite side of the aisle than me. We ended up talking about issues such as the environment, and that topic specifically was a great place for me to try to find common ground with my friend. My undergraduate degree from college actually is in environmental science and marine biology, even though later on, through my master's work, I decided to pursue a completely different area, which is what I'm in now, which is the helping profession with counseling. But I still love my natural environment. I still love ecology and animals and plant life. I love it. I don't think that anyone will disagree that God calls us to be good stewards of what we're given. I mean, it's right there in Genesis. So this allowed me to engage my friend in a conversation to show her that just because I'm a Christian doesn't mean that whatever the political views are of my party would fully support all the decisions based on that platform, meaning I'm not going to necessarily completely agree with everything that my political party does. However, I think that this is often the case with many of us, that there are common grounds that we can find. I'm also not saying that there are issues that we should compromise on. Of course, I'm not. There are certain things that we definitely need to be very firm on, and I'm not going to get into those right now, but I think a lot of our listeners probably already know what I'm talking about. So definitely finding those areas, those issues that we can build bridges on and really connect with people that we don't necessarily agree with is so critical for us to build rapport, for us to build relationships, so that they may very well be open to hearing about the gospel.
Any final thoughts?
Yes, as a matter of fact, having in-person and phone call conversations with people is way better than doing anything over social media. I've said this many times before in past segments. Social media, we can tend to be too sarcastic. We like to forward little biting memes or whatever to try to make our points. And I'll tell you what, God convicts me a lot on that. I mean, there's been plenty of posts that I've had to delete myself. But this is a good time of year to have a hot cup of coffee, hot chocolate or whatever, engage people in meaningful bridge-building conversations. conversations. And, of course, don't forget to pray prior to going into those conversations.
Once again, you've been listening to another edition of Real Answers with Christopher Anderson. Airs Wednesdays during the noon report. We tackle the tough topics facing today's families with Christian counselor Christopher Anderson.
Thank you, guys. Let's head to the Weather Center one more time.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. While we are enjoying a little bit of a break from the cold air, there's more cold air to come. Pair of cold fronts over the next several days dropping down from the north will assure us of some chilly air that'll carry us through the weekend. But for this afternoon, milder than of late. Where there is sunshine, clouds will gather, and clouds will elsewhere thicken up across the region with high temperatures in the 40s. A couple of light rain showers or sprinkles this evening, some flurries overnight tonight into tomorrow morning. Low tonight in the 20s, the high tomorrow in the 30s. And then on Friday, it's partly, if not mostly, sunny and chilly with high temperatures in the upper 20s. To the middle 30s.
All right, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. Finally at noon, a ticket to ride to the moon. Family Life's Brandon Dixon has more on this out-of-world experience.
8 seats are up for grabs on the SpaceX flight around the moon in 2023. A Japanese entrepreneur has bought the seats for the first all-civilian lunar mission and will invite people from around the world. The trip will spend 3 days going to the moon, circle behind it, and then 3 days to come back. To sign up for the contest, visit dearmoon.earth. Pre-registration continues through March 14th. Initial screenings will be done by March 21st, and following an assignment and interview, the crew will be chosen later this year. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. That is the world we live in this Wednesday. As always, thanks for coming along. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.